Hello, friends and fellow lovers of all things beachy. Welcome to The Beach Speaks. I'm your host and podcast junkie, Paige Friend, and each week I'm going to bring you a conversation with people and businesses that are creating conscious community, spreading the word about health, wellness, and wealth, basically everything that makes the beaches the place to be. So grab a cool drink, sit back in your beach chair, stick your toes in the sand, and join me for this episode of The Beach Speaks. Hey, beach lovers. I'm just going to put this question out there and see where the ocean takes it. Was there ever a time when you were just sailing through life and your career? You've mapped out your course and you have it all figured out. Everything is beachy. Sure, it wasn't easy. You had to work hard and there was some stress, but you're an achiever. You're used to some rough surf. You can handle it. Then a series of waves come along that knock you off your course, each one taking you a little farther away from where you thought you'd be, until out of the depths of life's ocean, the big one hits. And well, it's one of those waves that completely pulls you under and then washes you up on the shore. You can't even think straight. Your map is gone and your body and your brain hurt. Literally. What do you do then? In this episode, you'll get to hear my guest, Jen Shepherd, tell her story of facing that giant wave and having to make a complete life pivot, guided by her intuition, the principles of yoga, and of course, the healing power of the beach. So let's settle into our beach chairs, bask in the warm sun and ocean breeze, and listen as Jen tells us her tale about leadership, intuition, travel, yoga, waterfalls, and well, I'll let her tell the rest. It's pretty inspiring. Here's Jen. Welcome, Jen, to The Beach Speaks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And we've been having many technical difficulties over a number of days trying to make this happen, and maybe we'll have to take a technology break somewhere just to be sure we're in sync. But right now, I think everything's fine. There's a whole lot of things I wanted to talk to you about. However, I thought we would just get beachy here in the beginning, because this is The Beach Speaks. And how is the beach speaking to you today?
Well, I typically every day think about the beach, specifically Hawaii. I'm wearing one of my shirts that I got in Hawaii, so aloha. And one of the only reasons I use Facebook anymore is because I love the Facebook memories. Like, I'm very time oriented and I like to look back on, you know, things that happened, you know, over the years that I've had a Facebook account. And my memories in the past week or so have been of Hawaii. I was there 2 years ago, February of 2019. And it was my first time doing aerial yoga. I don't know if you've ever done that, but it was very challenging.
Oh my goodness. I have yet to try that, but people tell me it's fabulous.
It is, but in the beginning, I was very, very uncomfortable because it was so unfamiliar. And, you know, it's like I had gone through my yoga teacher training already, so I kind of felt like it wouldn't be that difficult. But being upside down was really, really challenging for me. Like I had a lot of fear and discomfort with that. So it was an interesting experience.
Fear of you're going to fall out of the silks and onto the mat, or that the whole thing was going to collapse.
Not so much that it was going to collapse, but just the sensation of being upside down, and hanging out there. It's not something I'd ever done before. Even in my yoga classes where we would occasionally do a shoulder stand at the wall with blocks underneath your shoulders. And so your head is just suspended between the blocks. The first time I did it, I was like, I don't like it. I don't like it. I want to get down. So it took some getting used to, but all that to say, my memory is looking back on that, because I went again a few weeks later to do the same yoga retreat and the same yoga, the aerial yoga, because I really did love it and I got a lot of benefit out of it. But I just love looking back at my Hawaii pictures and reminiscing about that trip and the many trips that I've had there. And so yeah.
There is something about Hawaii that people speak about. I have yet to get there. Eventually I will. There's a whole list of beaches left to around the world to explore. Where in Hawaii were you?
That particular trip was Maui.
Yeah. Lovely. Yeah. And that beautiful aquamarine blue clear water.
Yes. And the water's so beautiful and the waterfalls and, you know, like where I was staying, it was like a couple miles from the bamboo forest. And so I went on this like hike through the bamboo and to these waterfalls and, you know, it was just amazing. Just absolutely.
Sounds like phenomenal. A movie.
Yeah.
That's what our beach dreams are, right? Well, you do get a chance to visit the beach here. You're in Orlando. However, you do go over to the coast, right? Where do you usually go when you're
Well, from Orlando, I usually just go directly east to Cape Canaveral or Cocoa mm-hmm. Beach sometimes. But usually I just get to Canaveral and stop because I don't want to be driving any more than I have to. I just want to get to the beach.
I'm so with you on that. It takes, about
an hour, a little less.
About an hour. Yeah, it's not too bad. Yeah, and you're a photographer, and I've seen pictures with the lens ball.
Yeah.
I'm so inspired by that. I went ahead and got one of my own. I have to tell you a funny story, though. My husband had overheard me talking about your pictures in the lens ball, and we have an anniversary and my birthday coming up next week, and so he surprised me with what he thought was a lens ball, but it ended up being a crystal ball.
Oh.
Like it was so big and heavy. And we were looking at it like, I don't think this is it.
That's awesome.
It was a beautiful crystal ball. And I thought, well, you know, I'd love to have it foretell my future or see whatever it is.
Put it on your altar.
Yeah, put it on my altar. We ended up returning it and getting a smaller one. So so tell me your experience of taking pictures over there and what do you do when you're over at the beach?
I do a variety of things. Like last summer I started trying to go to the beach like every week, and at first I would just kind of like sit in my chair and or get in the water if, you know, the water was calling to me, which it normally is. So, you know, mm-hmm. I would get in the water a little bit, sit in the chair and just take it all in. I wouldn't really walk too much last summer just because I was still sort of gaining strength and mobility after going through my cancer treatments, mm-hmm. which I'll talk more about. But yeah, when I'm out there now, it's like I usually will walk for a little bit, take pictures. Now that I have the lens ball, I've only used it out at the beach a couple of times because you do have to be careful using it in the full sunlight. Like it's better to use it like at sunset time when the sun isn't as direct, because it can like burn your hand or start a fire if you're like around things that are flammable. So
don't want that.
Yeah, definitely don't want that. But yeah, it's an awesome, fun photography tool that, you know, I'm really just exploring and playing with. And getting pictures out at the beach is a little bit challenging because the idea is that you want to be looking through the ball. So taking a picture mm-hmm. from the side of it, but it's like, if you have the ball on the ground,
you got to get right down there with it
to take pictures.
Yeah.
It's fine when it's in the sand, but when it's in the water, like right now, the water's too cold for me to get in. So
it is cold. I've been caught a number of times standing close to shore trying to take a photograph and then having this wave come up and I'll forget, oh yeah, I'm right here in the water.
Yeah,
we've talked about the beach, and I know that it is integral to your health and wellness in a whole lot of ways. And you have a really good story starting way back. So if you want to take us through time, through the life of Jen Shepherd and what you've experienced and how you came to where you are now.
Try to hit the highlights. So yes,
hit the highlights.
I am back in Orlando, Florida, which is really where I grew up. It's where I went to high school. And for my undergraduate and master's degree, I went to the University of Central Florida, UCF. So here in Orlando. And in 2011, actually, I had moved out to Southern California. And my career was in the hospitality industry. So like here in Orlando, I worked at Disney World for a year. I worked at the Gaylord Palms Resort for a few years. And when I moved out to California, I continued in the hospitality industry. And then from California, ended up in Austin, Texas, where I was for about 3.5 years. And when I moved there, I started working remotely in like a corporate training position, and also in the hospitality industry. And I was traveling like 90% of the time, the first year that I had the job. And I also was getting my doctorate at that time. So it was a lot going on, like simultaneously between like a big job, that was still a fairly new job, getting my doctorate, which was a 3-year program. And it was like a hybrid program to where it was mostly remote or virtual. And then I had to go to Southern California, which is where the university is, 5 times a year for a long weekend for what we call practicum. So, and I pursued that because when I was living in California, there was a Cal Poly Pomona was right next to the hotel that I worked at, the university there, and they had a hospitality management program. And so when I got out there, I thought, oh, maybe I can be like a guest speaker in some of their classes, you know, and share my experience with the students. And, you know, because I had just been a student in the hospitality program here in Orlando at UCF. So, you know, it's like I knew how much I liked hearing guest speakers and hearing about their journeys and their experiences. And so I met with the people that run the program out there at Cal Poly, and we had like lunch and talking about like, you know, I'm available if you guys need guest speakers, you know, guest lecturers or whatever. And they were like, well, do you just want to teach a class? And at the time I was like, okay. I was like, when would that start? And it was like in 4 weeks, the class would be starting. And so I ended up teaching an intro to hospitality, or excuse me, intro to event management class. They did quarters there. They didn't have semesters. So I did that for a quarter and then ended up doing 3 additional quarters after that. So while I was out in California, and I really loved it. And I was like, man, I wonder like what would I have to do to be able to do this full time to be, you know, a teacher at the university level. And so I talked to the assistant dean there, and he explained about getting a terminal degree, which is like a PhD or an EdD. And so I looked into the program that I ended up doing, which is at the University of Laverne. And at first, so this was probably like 2012-ish, I was like, no, like I'm not smart enough for that. Like that's not going to happen. And so I just sort of put it on a shelf. But I was really interested in the program and this idea of like getting a doctorate. And we moved to Austin in 2013, and I ended up going ahead and applying for the program. And I was also looking for jobs because I had left my job when we left California. And so pretty much at the same time, I got a new job with the corporate training that was going to be like 90% travel that first year. And I got accepted into the doctorate program. So I ended up deferring for a year because I knew that was going to be too much, too fast, like, you know, all at the same time. So I didn't start my doctorate until 2014, but that was a 3-year program. And graduated from that in 2017. But right before I graduated, I had an unexpected end of an like 8+ year relationship. So this is at this point, I'm living in Austin. I'm about 6 months away from finishing my degree, which involves a lot of work at the end, you know, because you have to write the dissertation and then you have to defend the dissertation and then you have to finish all of your coursework and, you know, cross all the T's and dot all the I's and make sure everything's good to go. So it was going to be an intense period of time. And then I had this sudden unexpected change. And so I sort of was like, already a challenging time, like I said, with, you know, my doctorate program and, you know, a full-time job where I was still traveling a lot. It wasn't 90%, but it was still a lot. And, you know, also just trying to have a life and have a relationship and all those things in the midst of that. And then the relationship ending really put me in this position of needing to make a decision. And it was kind of the first time in my life that I've ever really trusted my intuition and went without having like a fully mapped out plan, went forward without a plan. Cause it's like, you know, I was like, okay, I could stay in Austin. I could come home to Orlando. I could go back to California. And then I also had this idea that it would be fun and interesting to go and like do trial runs in different cities that I thought I might want to live in.
Not a bad idea.
and stay there for like a month or two and, you know, just sort of like test it out and, you know, see different parts of the country like while I was doing that. So I ultimately decided to do that. And that was like after much like meditation and talking with my mom and, you know, pulling oracle cards and like really trying to figure out like what's the best and right decision. So I ultimately decided to go on the adventure, but I was like, first, I need to finish my dissertation. Like, absolutely have to finish that before I go like gallivanting around the country. So I left Austin. I packed up my car. I took my dog, Theo, and we drove to California. We lived in an Airbnb. Actually, that just came up on my memories today as well on Facebook. A picture of the Airbnb in Huntington Beach.
See, now there's a good thing to Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like
one of the
few good things. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, that memory actually came up. So I was like reminiscing about that rental property. And it was like literally 5 minutes from the beach. It was amazing. So Theo and I would go every day either to Dog Beach or just to walk on like the boardwalk at Huntington Beach. So it was awesome, you know, but I literally worked from like 4 or 5 a.m. because I would have conference calls that were all East Coast time, you know, every day. And then, you know, when work ended, then I would start on my schoolwork. And, you know, Saturday and Sunday, it's like the first thing you do when you wake up is like get on the laptop. And I just remember thinking like, oh, I can't wait until the day that like 7 days a week, the first thing I do is not getting on the computer, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you told me before, you're not a morning person. So
no,
having to be up early like that to meet the East Coast time might have been a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, definitely a challenge. But I knew that going into it. And I thought California would be ideal because it was like, I wanted to just be able to focus on school. And then when I would have to travel for practicum, it's like I was already in Southern California. So it wasn't a big deal.
Right.
And I have really great community out there from when I lived there previously. So just wonderful people that, you know, were all helping to take care of me during that stressful
time. So how wonderful that you were mobile, that you were able to work during that time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The fact that like I could live anywhere, and even my bosses, they were like, yeah, we don't care where you live, like do whatever you want. So
okay.
As long as I was in Maryland when I needed to be there, that was all they cared about. So, and then my job was getting done, of course.
Yeah. Well, what were you doing specifically in your job?
At that point, I was director.
I'm just thinking, people out there thinking, what kind of job can I get like that? Where I travel around and where my boss says, I don't care where you are.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was director of development, training development for, global sales, revenue management, the reservation centers for Marriott hotels at that point. So it was a big job. You know, I had a global team and a team of developers who also all worked remotely from home that would develop the training. And, you know, I was more so like in meetings and calls with the different strategic leaders and the various organizations that we supported to help them figure out what they needed for training and, you know, developing solutions for that. So, but it was great, you know, and I love to travel, period. And working in the hospitality industry has a lot of really great benefits when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they all recover from the pandemic. It's been a difficult time for the hospitality industry.
Yeah, especially there in Orlando, for sure, because that drives the economy big time.
Yeah. So yeah, so I, you know, was living in an Airbnb and working on my doctorate and was able to finish my dissertation, defend my dissertation. And then I was like, well, I still want to stay West Coast because I still had like practicum that I needed to go to. So by this point, it's like March, and in May, I needed to be in Southern California for the final practicum and then graduation. So I decided to go up to Portland, Oregon and live there for a month. And I'm glad that I did that because now I know that I cannot live in the Pacific Northwest.
Nice place to visit, but you don't want to live there.
Exactly. I definitely want to go back in the summer. Like, it was so beautiful when I was there. I was like, I can only imagine when the weather's actually really nice and you can be outside. It was just too cold and too rainy for me. Like, I'm a Florida girl. Like, I'm a beach girl. You know, it was not my scene, but it was a really cool city. And like, the wine tasting in the Willamette Valley. And I took Theo one day and we like drove along the Columbia Gorge and like saw the waterfalls and stuff along the way. So it's super beautiful, and I definitely want to go back. But I'm glad that I went and lived there for a month, because now I know that I don't want to live there, you know? So then I came back down to Southern California, graduated, and drove to Nashville. And Nashville was always going to be one of my stops along the way on my, you know, where do I want to live journey. And I had been to Nashville once before for a weekend, and I really liked it. And it's very similar to Austin. And I really wanted somewhere that was similar to Austin. So yeah, I got to Nashville, felt right. I found an apartment the next day, got an air mattress, and sat in my beach chair and worked on my laptop until all of my possessions from Austin came. And so I spent the past 2.5 years in Nashville, and ultimately ended up leaving my corporate job for health reasons, getting my yoga teacher training at the yoga studio that I found there, and then starting my business, Rising Lotus Leadership, which I was sort of fleshing out, okay, what does it mean to be an entrepreneur? And, you know, what is my business going to look like? And what am I going to offer? Fleshing a lot of that out in 2019.
Yeah, I've circled back to the yoga and Rising Lotus. You had told me that you were thinking about the limbs of yoga. And those of you who practice yoga know that there's more than just the one asanas that most of us are familiar with. There's 8 limbs of yoga. And you were discovering that that's basically what you were practicing in your work, right?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, with my doctorate degree, learned a lot about different leadership theories and models. And in my career was, trying to apply those theories and models and ways that made sense for me. But when I moved to Nashville and I was sort of rebuilding my life from the ground up, I really wanted to incorporate yoga as a key part of that foundation. And so I started practicing really regularly. And when I did my yoga teacher training. So I was practicing really regularly while I was still working in my corporate job. And I realized that my yoga practice had helped me get to know myself better, you know, become more comfortable with my thoughts and opinions and expressing them and knowing what those even are. Cause I think sometimes that's hard. It's what do I really believe or what do I really think in this situation? And so yoga helped me gain that insight and get to know myself basically, which made me a better leader because then I was able to connect better with my team, remain calm, in these stressful situations.
I was going to ask you, did it help you just be grounded so that when you needed to address others in other situations, it was helping you?
Yes, absolutely. Because my yoga practice was always there for me. Even if I'm not on a yoga mat doing physical practice, taking deep breaths or, just a 30-second meditation, even if it's for me, it can be as simple as just looking at a video of the beach, for 30 seconds. It's it can really center me. It's okay.
Did you ever feel telling a coworker or employee, go to your office, close the door,
go to your room,
take 10 deep breaths, and then come back out and talk to me about this problem?
No, I mean, I think that my approach was always just more let's get all the information and let's look at this rationally. And, not to say that I was never emotional or never expressed, frustration or anything like that. I mean, that obviously happened. But my yoga practice just helped me be more centered and grounded, like you had said. So kind of realizing this, but not consciously realizing it yet, that my yoga was helping me so much in my leadership. It wasn't until I did my yoga teacher training and I was learning about all the 8 limbs, which I had been practicing, but didn't really specifically know about them. Mm-hmm. That I was this is leadership. All of the things that we're talking about, the first 2 limbs, the yamas and niyamas, are ethics, and foundation. And that's all things that apply to leadership, because I believe that we're all leaders, regardless of title. You can be a leader in your home, in your community, at school, and at work, even if you're, not a director or an assistant director or manager in your title or supervisor. I believe that everybody's a leader because you're a leader of yourself at a bare minimum. You're a leader of your own life.
Well, that's a really interesting concept. There's a lot of people think that some people are meant to be leaders and others are meant to be followers and that sort of thing. But we all have that innate leadership quality. Well,
we all have leadership qualities, and we can all we're going to have strengths, right, and weaknesses. But I look at leadership because I think leadership can be really intimidating. And oftentimes people will be like, oh, that's not me. I'm not a leader. And they just sort of like move on. You know, it's like, oh, that doesn't apply. But so I think it's intimidating. And, you know, I really want to empower people to embrace their own leadership style. And that's why I think of leadership as a practice, just like I think of my yoga as a practice. You know, every practice is different. You know, some days I can touch the floor easier in a forward fold, and some days I'm nowhere near the floor in a forward fold, you know? And so when I think of leadership as a practice, and with all of the models and theories that exist, I sort of like cherry pick different components or different parts and apply it here where it makes sense, but then maybe do something different over here because it does, you know, the same thing doesn't apply or it doesn't make exact sense.
Yeah, I like what you said about it being a practice, leadership practice, just like yoga is a practice. You don't just do it and it's done. And it is different practically every time you get on the mat. And developing our leadership qualities is, you know, sometimes you'll do better than other times, but you have that awareness, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you might have an interaction and you're like, oh, well, that didn't really go so great. But then the next time around, you know, you've learned something from the first time and, you know, it evolves and you're practicing. So you don't have to be perfect. I think, and I hope that takes like some of the pressure off for people. And so that's really the idea like of Rising Lotus came from this idea of yoga and leadership, or yoga as a paradigm for leadership development. And I think educating people about what leadership is will hopefully change the way that we think about leadership. And I think talking more about yoga beyond just the physical practice, because that's what people tend to really think it is. And they think, oh, I need to be able to stand on my head. And it's like, I don't stand on my head. I mean, I already talked about aerial yoga and being upside down and, you know, the discomfort associated with that. But it's like, I mean, I can't even, in my forward fold, like you see pictures of people, you know, forward fold and their hands are like flat on the mat. And it's like, I'm lucky if my fingertips reach the mat.
Exactly.
And I'm okay with that. You know, I've learned to accept that.
It does make you very accepting of where you are at that moment. Even if yesterday you were able to touch your toes, today you just might not.
Yep. Yeah.
That's okay. Well, along about this time, something pretty significant happened to you, and I did want to address, because you had touched on it earlier, about something significant in your health that happened.
Yes, definitely. So, you know, it's like 2018 was when I did my teacher training, my yoga teacher training. And so that's when I really started to pursue this idea of entrepreneurship. It's like, okay, you know, like coming up with a name for my business and, you know, all the things that go along with that. And, you know, really trying to figure out like, what did I want to offer? And, 2019, starting to flesh that out more, you know, working with a graphic designer and web developer to do my branding and build my website. And things were going, you know, pretty well. And then I ended up getting diagnosed with brain cancer in May of 2019. And that was like complete. I mean, I literally was just in shock for about 6 months. Like, I don't even think I really cried until like 6 months later. After I got that news,
I can't imagine. How did it present itself? Did you just have?
I had a headache.
Headaches?
Yeah. Well, mid-April of 2019, I got a migraine, which I hadn't had a migraine in years. And usually, when I have a migraine, it kind of like leaves like a lingering like headache for a couple of days, and the lingering headache just like didn't go away for about a month, and it was pretty persistent. And I was traveling. I was delivering a training in New Jersey 4 weeks in a row, 2 day training. And so for 4 weeks, I was flying back and forth to New Jersey and had this headache. And I would get like this rush, like when I would stand up, like, you know, the blood rush into your head, that sensation, like I would get that like really intense, like head rush. And then I woke up one day, I was home in Nashville, and it was excruciating. like absolutely excruciating pain in my head. And I'm like, okay, well, this is not right. And so I ended up going to see my doctor, and she ordered an MRI, and she was like, just to rule out anything physical. She's like, I don't think there's anything physical. And then she called me. She's like, well, there's a mass. And she's like, I have an appointment for you to meet with a neurosurgeon tomorrow morning. And I was like, okay. And wow. I'm Googling like questions to ask a neurosurgeon, you know? So
then we call our mom.
Called mom and told her, and a friend in Nashville, she actually went with me to my first doctor's appointment because my mom was obviously here in Orlando. And so, yeah, I mean, I met with the neurosurgeon on Friday, the Friday before Memorial Day. And he was like, yeah, you've got a large brain tumor. He's like, you know, it needs to come out. He's like, I'd like to do surgery on Tuesday if you're okay with that. And I was like, yeah, that's fine.
I think I'm free on Tuesday. Well, I know we were getting the news about this firsthand or from your mother because she's part of our Goddess Girlfriend group. And it seemed like we were just celebrating your getting your doctorate and completing yoga. She was just kind of keeping us appraised of all your accomplishments because obviously she's a proud mother. And then all of a sudden we get this text, Jennifer has brain cancer. And we were all like, what?
Yeah, it was a huge shock.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. And so I had to decide that day, like if I was going to move forward with surgery on Tuesday. He's like, you know, you're welcome to get a second opinion. He's like, but we won't be able to do surgery on Tuesday. And so it's like, I sort of took a couple hours and like thought about it and even called the place where I would get the second opinion. And it's like, I wouldn't have been able to get an appointment till like August. So it's like, okay, well, that's ridiculous. Like I can't like live with this thing in here. Like the pain was so bad. And so I decided to have the surgery, and mom flew up and I had brain surgery and came home. Then I got an infection and had to have a second brain surgery, which was actually more upsetting to me for some reason.
That was a little scary.
Yeah. Well, I think because I had, not that the first one I had any, like, was any more prepared for the first one, but the second brain surgery, it's like, I felt like I had just finished like healing from the first, you know, and then it's like, okay, now you've got to like reopen, you know, the incision. And so I've got to start all over again with recovery and, you know, postpone chemo and radiation. And so it was a really awful, awful period in my life. And then I had complications. Like I got the shingles after the second surgery, and then I have permanent nerve damage from the shingles. And so I was in excruciating pain for about 2 months. Like I couldn't move and nothing could like touch me, which is, you know, hard to function when you can't move. So yeah. Thank God my mom was able to come and live with me in Nashville and take care of me and, you know, make food for me and try to make sure I'm getting enough protein and all the things that I needed. And, but you know, when you're in that amount of pain, it's so hard to like, know, is there like, it's so hard to see a way out, you know, like, is this going to end? Or am I going to be, you know, in this excruciating pain for the rest of my life? And thankfully the shingles pain did subside. And to be honest, like I never really had a lot of pain around like my head where I had the surgery. Most of my pain was the shingles, and then my body just sort of atrophying from not being able to move. But I did go to a couple of classes, like I think a week after my first surgery, I went to like a yin yoga class with my favorite teacher at my studio. And, but I just sat in one pose the entire time, you know, like it was just like, I just wanted to be in the studio and feel the energy, but I didn't like do a full yoga class for a very long time.
So note to self, if you go to a yoga class and you just feel like lying there in corpse pose or
legs up the wall,
feels good, legs up the wall or whatever, anything. It's perfectly fine. You have to listen to your body. It's telling you something.
Yes.
And yeah, sometimes you have to like pause and honoring your body and the messages that it's giving you. And it's okay.
Well, and it's hard to do. It's kind of like what I was saying. Like sometimes you don't know. It's like, what is your body telling you? And you're like, I don't know. But that's where practicing yoga for me helped me get to know my body and, you know, be able to listen to and receive those messages. Because before I would have had no idea. It's like, no, I'm going to do what the teacher's telling me to do, you know, and right. Now I know it's like, that's really a suggestion. And What I love about yoga, and I believe this translates to leadership and to life, is every pose can be modified. There's so many variations and ways to make the pose work for you and your body. Mm-hmm. And to try to let go of, you know, that need to compare yourself to the teacher or to the Instagram photo or to the person next to you in class that's, you know, that is standing on their head. Because, you know, sometimes at the end of class, it's like, oh, if you need to take any additional poses, and some people will do, you know, headstands and stuff. And that's great for them. That's part of their practice, but it's not part of mine. And that's okay for me. Like, I don't feel like I'm missing anything or lacking in any way. So that's what I love about yoga.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're writing a book. Tell us about the book and how that's all come about.
Well, prior to my brain cancer diagnosis, I have a few different book ideas, but when I got my diagnosis, and, you know, there's no cure for this brain cancer. And so it sort of like puts things in perspective. It's like, okay, well, you know, if I had to just pick one book that I was going to write, which book would it be? And it was the book on that I want to write on yoga as a paradigm for leadership development. So how the two relate and how you can apply yoga to leadership to help build your own intuitive leadership practice. And, you know, based on my journey and my experience with that, so it's like partially like I want to share my experiences, but, you know, kind of educate and give people information on like what yoga actually is, what leadership actually is, and, you know, make it less intimidating and hopefully, you know, empower people to develop their own authentic leadership practice and style. So,
and you know, from where you speak, because you've lived this, there is so much power in story. I talk about that a lot when you tell your story and you can relate it to the topic that you're trying to get across to people. It's going to sink in. People are going to respond to that a lot more. I mean, I was thinking a lot of people have book ideas, and I think you were like in the middle of chemo when you did something.
Yeah, I was in Nashville, and it was just a couple weeks after the second brain surgery. So I hadn't started chemo yet, but I was about 2 weeks out getting ready to start it. And there was a writing conference that was happening in Nashville, or like 45 minutes south of Nashville. And I wanted to go. It was just like a 1 day conference. And even my mom at the time was like, are you sure? Like, you sure you want to do that? And it's like, yeah, I really want to go because, you know, I don't really know anything about like, how does one actually write a book? You know, I've had this idea for years and, you know, feel very intimidated about publishing and, you know, how does all that work? And so I thought, well, I'll go and start to get information and go from there. And as part of that conference, you could also sign up to pitch a literary agent, like pitch your idea to an agent. And at the time I was like, I am nowhere near ready to pitch to an agent.
I was going to say, did you have a pitch prepared? No, or did you just kind of go in there like, okay, here's my idea?
No, I mean, the night before the conference, I was like typing up like a one pager of like, who am I? What is the book idea? And, you know, like a potential like draft outline type of thing, just so that I would have something to show her. But I was just kind of like, well, I'm going to do it because then that way I know what it's like to pitch an agent so that when I am ready, I'll be even more ready because I'll know what to expect.
Did you feel like you were at Shark Tank?
I really didn't know what to expect, honestly. Like, I mean, I think if I was going on Shark Tank, I would at least have more of an idea of what to expect because you can like watch the show and kind of like know.
Well, true. I'm just thinking like there's these people listening to you and kind of, oh, that's not such a good idea. Or, yeah, I really like that idea. I think I'll invest in that.
Yeah. I mean, it was wild. And it was just like, you only had like 10 minutes to sit down with an agent and like give your idea. And like, I was sort of like fully expecting for her to be like, okay, thanks, you know, thanks, but no thanks. And she loved the idea. Like she thought it, mm-hmm. she said she thought it was phenomenally interesting and, you know, gave me a couple suggestions and said that she's like, I won't guarantee that I'll be your agent. She's like, but I'll help you put together a proposal so that we can then, you know, if she's like, if I'm going to be your agent, then I would, you know, then take it to publishers and like pitch it. But I was just like, I mean, I'll take any help I can get. So that sounds great to me. So she's the one that provided me with like a template of like what does a proposal look like? Because that was another thing. It's like,
I've heard it's very daunting. You hear writers who actually teach courses on how to do a book proposal. I was listening to Beautiful Writers podcast. I'm a podcast junkie, so I'm always saying I heard on a podcast. It was Marie Forleo who just finished Everything is Figureoutable and talking about how she wrote and rewrote and rewrote her book proposal. And here, you know, she's very well known. And then Elizabeth Gilbert was talking about it. She said, well, I think I wrote a proposal for my first book, but then I get, you know, she was so, they knew who she was. And she said, I'm lucky. I could just say, hey, I kind of have this idea. You know, do you think I could? And they were like, yeah, okay, just go with that. I think we all want to be that one writer that's got the idea. Of course, you can self-publish and then you don't have to worry about any of that, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think self-publishing is a great option. And I may end up going that route. I mean, at this point, I'm really working on, you know, building out the proposal, because you have to have like 2 to 3 chapters as part of the proposal.
So it's not a bad thing to do anyway, because then you have a framework for how you want to
exactly approach the book
if you decide to self-publish. Yeah, I'm just kind of wanting to go through the process a little bit for myself, because I'd love to publish something, maybe not a book, but something. And there are a lot of people that I talk to in my business growth development groups and what have you that have ideas for a book. And that's the main topic of conversation when somebody says, I want to write a book. And we all are saying, yeah, how do you do that?
Yeah.
I do too. The probably the first thing is just to start somewhere, and it'll lead you where it wants to go.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think starting to actually write is helpful, because that way, you know, when you get to the point of like someone wanting to see like something, you have something to show them. But yeah, there's so many different routes, because I've also listened to, you know, different podcasts and, you know, read different books about writing, and, you know, everybody's journey is so unique and specific to them.
Yeah. You're familiar with The Artist's Way, Julia Cameron's book. You've probably done it. I joined a Rich Roll podcast. Some of the members on the Facebook group were talking about doing a book club, and someone had suggested The Artist's Way, and a bunch of us jumped on that and said, yeah, okay. So we started a little Facebook group for the book club, and we've started off with The Artist's Way and doing our morning pages. And that's been interesting, because the premise, the theory is you just sit down and write 3 pages first thing in the morning, and it isn't supposed to make sense. It's stream of consciousness. You could write the same word over and over again if you can't think what to write, but it's just to get you in the practice of writing, and just the physical.
Yeah. Well, and to clear your brain so that you can function for the day, like whatever it is that you need to do, you know, you don't have like sort of like clearing the clutter out, you know. I was never very good at doing the morning pages, because it's like, for me, it was like, oh, I've got to get up then, you know, even earlier to do my morning pages. And I'm like, I want to sleep for every possible second that I can sleep. So I was never good at the morning pages, but one day I'll do it.
So. Get the evening pages done before you go to bed. Just dump all that stuff out from the day out on the page.
Yeah.
I wonder how that would work. That'd be a good exercise.
Yeah, maybe I should try that. Maybe then I'll sleep better.
Might be. Well, so now you've come kind of full circle. You're back in Orlando, yeah, and you're in, we'll say, remission, kind of sort of, from the cancer. And you're starting Rising Lotus Leadership, writing a book.
Yeah.
You did a life pivot like a lot of us have done.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that like, as hard as the experience of 2017 was, of like the end of my relationship and like, you know, I had a house in Austin that I loved and a community in Austin that I still love, and I still have that community there. But, you know, I really loved my life, and leaving that and like sort of dissolving and rebuilding, as difficult as that was, I do think that it gave me a lot of the skills that I needed to get through like 2019 with the brain cancer diagnosis, and even 2020 with the pandemic, because everybody was like, you know, when quarantine first happened, you know, last March, and everyone's like losing their minds about being stuck inside the house and not being able to go anywhere and do anything. And it's like, well, I've been living this life for the past 9 months, you know?
Right. I remember your mother saying that it's not really that big a deal for us because
we've basically
been quarantined this whole time.
Yeah, nothing had changed.
Were you able to get out at the beach at all? I know they had closed the beaches for a little bit.
Well,
where we were.
I'm trying to think, like, no, I didn't start going to the beach until like June, until I finished my last round of chemo, because I was doing like this monthly chemo still in like March. I had 6 months of it. So May was my last round. So I really didn't want to be going anywhere, even to the beach, like until I was done with chemo. Like I just didn't want to risk like being exposed to anything.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But I was just curious to know if you found any healing from going to the beach. And because for me, that's very, very healing.
Well, I mean, and a great example of that is so I didn't talk about any of the yoga retreats, but 2017, I went on my first yoga retreat to Costa Rica and then became addicted to yoga retreats. So like the following year I went to Italy, and I think that's also the year that you went to Italy on a yoga
retreat. Yeah, we were in Italy. Yeah.
Like, so we were almost at the same place at the same time, which is crazy. And, I was supposed to be going to Spain on a yoga retreat, but then I had to have brain surgery. So I had to cancel that yoga retreat, which was like another like loss that, you know, I didn't really get to grieve because it was, I mean, literally like,
gee, I can't go to Spain because I got brain cancer. Oh, what?
Well, and that, it was kind of funny at the time. It was a little bit of a joke with my friend that was there with me, was when the doctor was like, you know, I'd like to do surgery on Tuesday if that works for you. And I was like, yeah, I was like, well, I'm supposed to be going to Spain on whatever day it was. It was like,
that would be me.
Well,
wait
like,
a minute.
Yeah, you're not going to Spain.
If you're not going to Spain right now.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Well, that's good that you could find a little humor in that. I think, in fact, you had said to me that things that might have bothered you long ago or prior to all this experience, now you just, it doesn't bother you. It's almost like don't sweat the small stuff.
And I mean, I think that like having what technically is like a terminal, you know, cancer diagnosis, what it does is it's like, okay, what are my priorities? It's like, even with the book, right? It's like, okay, which book would I focus on if I could only pick one? Okay. It just really makes you like hone in on what is important. And then when little things come up that it's like, okay, well, this is a problem that has a solution. So I'm not even worried about this, you know? So I was supposed to go to Spain, had to cancel that. And I booked for March 2020, I was going back to Costa Rica, this time with my yoga teacher from Nashville, the one that I did my yoga teacher training with. And so I was so looking forward to this yoga retreat, you know, absolutely. Cause I was like, I loved Costa Rica when I went the first time, and this retreat was actually going to be by the coast, so by the beach, and, you know, just looking forward to it. Well, then the pandemic starts cropping up, and everyone was like, are you still going to go? And it's like, heck yeah, I'm still going to go. Like, this is going to be so healing for me, like so beneficial and healing, you know, being by the beach and, you know, being on a yoga retreat. And a few days before the trip was supposed to happen, they proactively canceled it, the organizer and like the company that, you know, was putting it on for us, because people were asking like, oh, are we still going? Is this happening? You know, like, is it safe? And so they proactively canceled it and said like, we would just have a credit to use in the future. But pretty much everybody was like, but we still want to go. Like, we weren't asking for it to be canceled. You know, we just were asking if you were going to cancel it. And so it's like a little bit of like a miscommunication, I think. So there was like an hour where I thought it was being canceled, and I was like crying. And I was like, I was so looking forward to this, you know, and I needed this. And everyone was like, but we still want to go. And Jillian, the yoga leader, was like, well, if Jen is willing to go, she's like, then we're going. So it was sort of funny. It was like, so we went to Costa Rica, and it was a very healing experience, like being so close to the ocean and the water. And yeah, so had my Costa Rica retreat in March of 2020, was supposed to go to Ireland last fall, September of 2020, but then they proactively canceled that, and it's rescheduled for September of this year. So,
well, I think we can probably wrap this up. We've talked about Rising Lotus leadership and your experiences through the cancer and beyond the book that's going to be written some way, shape, or form, and how you found healing in the ocean. I'd like to kind of end with maybe that waterfall story that you were alluding to, because I think people would love to hear that.
Yes. Well, I'll share the one from Hawaii, because I think it's kind of a little bit more of a journey to get to the waterfall. So if you've been to Maui, there's a road, the Road to Hana, and it's, I think, like only 30 miles or something, but it's a super narrow, twisty, almost one lane road on the edge of the island. So it's like on one side, you've got like a wall of, you know, volcano. And then on the other side, you have a cliff.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a little bit treacherous.
So you like looking down this cliff?
Sometimes, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so the yoga retreat center that I was staying at was on the Road to Hana. It was like mile 4.5, I think. And so you had a little bit of like twists and turns to get there. Sometimes your twists and turns were inland and you weren't like on the edge. But, you know, it was one way. And so you had to stop and see if there was a car coming before you could go. And you kind of had to take turns. And anyways, all this to say that they were right near the bamboo forest. And so one day I drove over and parked my car, and you see all the cars parked along the side of this road, which there's really not a lot of room to park your car, but people do it.
Right. And you're thinking, something's here.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, something's here.
Oh.
And so you park, and like to get into the bamboo forest, like you literally just walk into like a wall of bamboo. Like you just start walking.
So there's not like a path. People just know to stop at the certain
point. Yeah, you know to stop at the mile marker.
Like, I'm thinking of like Field of Dreams when people just walk into the cornfield randomly, you know?
Yeah, but so, that's how it is in the bamboo forest. I mean, there was like somewhat like little trails that you could see where people had like been before. And so managed to find one of those. And so then you walk down and then you have to like walk across this like 2x4 that is bridging this like gap with like the water rushing. And so you like walk across the 2x4 and then you kind of climb through and then you cross like another stream. And then you're on like a wide, and at the time it was really muddy, so a really wide, muddy path with bamboo all along the side. And you're just kind of like traipsing through, like assuming that you're going in the right direction. Like we knew there were waterfalls, right. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, we're going towards the waterfalls, we hope. So you're walking, and it wasn't like terribly far. And then you get to the first waterfall. And there's the most people are at that one because it's the first one and it's the easiest one to get to.
Right.
So people are kind of swimming in it, and it's a nice waterfall, but it's not like breathtaking necessarily. And to get to the second one, which was like up a level, so it's like a multi-leveled like waterfall, and you couldn't see the second waterfall, but it's like, oh, if you cross over this waterfall, like the bottom of it, and you climb this rock wall and you walk up. climb the rock wall.
Yeah.
And right. I'm not like I've never had like good upper body strength. And, you know, one time I tried to go rock climbing and I was like a foot off the ground and I was like, I don't like it. I want to get down. And
so were you saying rock climb? I don't know about this.
Well, pretty much. Like, I don't know if I can do this, but there was a rope that was like tied in at the top. And so you could hold onto the rope and kind of like walk up the wall. I crawled up the wall, but I did it.
You were going to get
there. Yeah, I did it. Yeah. And so then you know, you kind of walk along and then you come to the second waterfall, which was just absolutely gorgeous and breathtaking. And there wasn't very many people up there. And so I think I even did like a video as like I'm walking through and then all of a sudden it was like revealed to me and it was so beautiful. And it was also sort of like multi-leveled. And so I swam over and like sat at the base of it and it was just really, really magical and beautiful. And there was a third level that you could get to, but I opted not to go there because to get to that one was a ladder propped along this like massive cliff. And I was like, yeah, no. Like that's not going to happen. Like I'm good where I'm at. Like I don't need to go to the third one.
This is beautiful. I'm okay.
Yeah, I've had a great experience. I climbed the little rock wall. I don't need to like, you know, climb a ladder up this cliff. So. That was a little bit, that was a little bit too extreme for me, but, no, just so beautiful. Like the way that, you know, the water's flowing and creating, you know, its own pathways and And I think that's why I'm just very drawn to water in general. And I think that's, you know, the beach with like the tides and the, you know, just it ebbs and flows and it does what it does without any, you know, control and input from us.
Right. Well, and our bodies are majority of water. I mean, we can't help but be affected, and the energy of the ocean and just the movement of water and that energy is going to move the energy in us.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
That's what I feel is so healing about the beach, about the ocean. Well, this has been wonderful. I wholly believe that after our third time trying to record this, that we did a good job. How do you feel? Feel good about it?
We were successful.
Yeah, I think so. Jen, thank you. Thank you so much. It's been an honor to have you and hear your story. And I wish you all the best with Rising Lotus. We will have links and ways to contact you in the show notes.
Perfect.
Yeah. And why don't you just tell us how people can reach you in the event that they can't read the show
notes. Yeah, definitely. I think that my Instagram account, which is at Rising Lotus Leadership, is a great option to kind of follow along and see, you know, the information that I'm putting out. Right now, focusing on like, what are those first two limbs of yoga and like, how can we practice those in our everyday life? And how does that translate to leadership? And so I'll kind of be building up from there. And my website is www.risinglotusleadership.com. So both of those ways, you can contact me through that. But yeah, I mean, I'm just hoping to really be able to provide the resources that I needed along my leadership journey, you know, things that I think would have helped me when I was a new leader and, you know, even when I was a little bit of an experienced leader. So that's the kind of things that I want to be able to provide for people. So, you know, feedback and interaction are welcome on my website and my social media
account. Excellent. Yeah. You have some beautiful posts on the social. So check out Jen there, and her website is beautiful. She has some wonderful offerings. And with that, I think we'll wrap it up. Thank you so much, Jen, for being here today on The Beach Speaks.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Beach is speaking. Are you listening? I hope you enjoyed today's episode and that there was something in our conversation that you can use in your own life when that big wave hits. Jen's company, Rising Lotus Leadership, offers leadership consulting and creates custom leadership development solutions with a side of yoga. Jen helps individuals and organizations develop an intuitive leadership practice by leveraging the wisdom of yoga. And if you want to learn more about Jen's services and how she can help you, you can contact her through email at Jen, J-E-N-N, at risinglotusleadership.com. Or on her website, risinglotusleadership.com. And you can support Jen by following her on Instagram and Facebook at Rising Lotus Leadership. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Beach Speaks. You can now listen on Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes. Also, visit my website, thebeachspeaks.com, for additional information about the episodes, and check out the gorgeous sunrise photos I've been taking. Follow on Facebook and Instagram, and please like, share, and subscribe. You can also go to the iTunes website, search for The Beach Speaks, and leave a review. So why am I asking you to do all of this? Well, because in this vast ocean of podcasting, it really helps us to reach more listeners. And as you know, the beach is speaking. Are you listening?